Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I don't hear you in the see why. One second. Try again.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Yes, now I can hear you better. Let's just see if this is in position. Right, okay.
Hi, Rabbi. I can hear you, but I just can't get my video on for some reason.
Okay, sure. Don't worry, I can hear you. And thank you very much. I'm sorry these things are so, don't know what the word is. Hi, Simcha. I'm sorry we didn't get to have a face-to-face talk. Individually in Toronto, which just a tremendous, tremendous rush. Thank God, with all different things happening. And there's Ilana, that's nice. Okay, so I think we're going to begin. I'm going to turn on the recording. Here we are. Record. Okay, is it recording now? Yes. Okay. Right. So this is a discourse. I think we can just go straight into the discourse. Oh, so I have to find it. This is a discourse that the Rebbe said in 1975. He said it on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, the first day of the, or the night before the first day of Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Now, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, is going to be Friday and Shabbat of this week. So, one second, I'm just looking for the right place. At the moment, fine. Right, okay. Now let's see. Right, okay, so long. Yeah, oops, long. Share. And here it is. Right. Okay, sure. Thank you for getting your video working. That's nice. And Debbie, that's nice seeing you. You managed to come on. That's great.
Thank you. I am driving, so I may not be able to stay on, and I appreciate your note about the recording.
Okay, right. Yeah, so it is being recorded. Exactly when it gets uploaded is another question, but it is being recorded, and if you want, I could try and send you the recording.
Appreciate
Now,
that.
and there's Sarah and there's Sophia. That's great seeing everyone. Okay. Now, over. So this is the first night of Rosh Chodesh Iyar. 5735, which is 1975. And the discourse begins with the words of Roshei Chodesheichem Takrivu on the new moon. On your new moons, you should offer. Now, this is actually the Haftorah for, it's part of the Haftorah for a new moon. So on Shabbat, when it will be the new moon, it'll be Rosh Chodesh. So this section will be read from Parshat Pinchas in the Midbar, in the Book of Numbers, which gives a list of the offerings which are offered up in the temple on Rosh Chodesh, because the Torah reading corresponds to the offering. And so we read the account of the offering. So that extra Torah reading is there, like the offering, the bima, the sort of the desk where the Torah is read represents the altar. And it's as if the offering is offered on the altar. Also, the Musaf service, the second Amidah that we say on Rosh Chodesh, there's always another Amidah, there's another standing prayer, which, as there is every Shabbat and every festival, and even if it's a weekday, there would also be a second standing prayer, the Musaf prayer, for Rosh Chodesh. Now, so that is the verse which the discourse is going to take off from. And this discourse is a continuation of two earlier discourses, which were printed in the Dvar Malchut system, which is a widely publicized production communicating discourses and many other things, the daily Torah study. And so the last 2 weeks over Pesach, it had the earlier discourses here. And so this discourse picks up on themes which were expressed more fully in the earlier discourse, which helps me explain them in this discourse. So this is going to be our starting point about Rosh Chodesh, and it'll come back to that at the end. It's a very long discourse, incidentally. We'll probably skip bits out and so on. But it's a beautiful, beautiful teaching about the way that Rosh Chodesh, the new moon, that means the first of the Hebrew month, when the moon is full on the 15th of the month, and then it gets smaller and smaller until by the end of the month it's almost, or it has disappeared. And that's what's called in English the new moon. And it's then replaced by the new moon, and you get a thin sliver of moon, and that's the beginning of the month. And that's the Rosh Chodesh, the head of the month. And what it explains here is that Rosh Chodesh Iyar, which is what we're coming to, the second month of the year. The first month is Nisan, when we were redeemed from Egypt, and the second month is Iyar. And then you have all the other months of the year. So the new moon of Iyar, and indeed all the other new moons during the entire year, draw their spiritual strength from the new moon of Nisan. So the new moon of Nisan, that is a new moon which relates to redemption. And that aspect of redemption flows in to every new moon throughout the year. And from the new moon of each month, it flows into each day. So each day we are benefiting from that illumination of the new moon of redemption of the month of Nisan. And that includes in it the special moment of the Exodus from Egypt and the going out of Egypt, that moment of the Exodus from Egypt, that midnight, round midnight on the first day, on the first night of Pesach, when hopefully we were in a Seder and eating matzah around that time. Now that moment is an ecstatic cosmic moment. In Kabbalistic language, it's when the masculine and feminine aspects of the divine before the Tzimtzum, before the whole realm of concealment, which led to the creation of the physical universe, those masculine and feminine dimensions, which are in the Sfirot, but we're speaking of the Sfirot on a very exalted level. They combine together, and that is an ecstatic, intense moment of spirituality, which then spills through, flows through. It flows, it triggers off the redemption from Egypt and the splitting of the Red Sea, which we'll hopefully deal with in a little bit more detail, and the giving of the Torah. And then it flows into the new month, the new moon, every month of the year, and that flows into every single day. So the teaching of this discourse is heightening our awareness of the excitement and the intensity and the opportunity that there is every single day of the year. And in that way, we carry Pesach through into our daily lives throughout the year. All right, so that is an attempt at giving you a postage stamp of the whole discourse, like standing on one foot. So I think now we can have the Maimonides, the melody of the discourse, which was always sung or very often sung when the Rebbe said a discourse in 770. That was because he would give a warning. He would say, "Sing the Maimonides," and they would begin singing the Maimonides, and the Rebbe would sort of, in a very obvious way, he would sort of prepare to give this discourse, and everyone would stand up and they were prepared to hear the discourse. But sometimes the Rebbe didn't do that. Sometimes he just began. Now, the discourse was one out of five, six, eight talks that the Rebbe would give in a Hasidic gathering. And sometimes he would be giving what seemed like an ordinary talk, one of those other talks called Sichot. And suddenly it will be realized that this is actually a discourse from its content, its Kabbalistic content, its way of quoting the previous Rebbeim. It would be recognized that this is really a discourse, but it's being said in the form of a talk. And so sometimes one sees, it's described as a discourse in the form of a sicha, and in the form of a talk. So I don't, they actually don't record in these transcripts, they don't record which way it was communicated. But I suspect it was a regular discourse with the melody. And the melody of the discourse goes like this. Oh ya 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 yo ya yom, oh ya 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 yom, ha ya 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 yom ba yom, ha yedaram ba ha ya yam ba yom, ha yo ya yedaram ba ya ya yom, ha yedaram ba ya ya yom. Ha yedidam ba ha yam ba ho ya 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 yam ha ya 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 ho ya ya ho ya ya yo. Right, so here we are at this beautiful discourse, and on the new moons you should offer, and it goes into a list of the how many bulls and so on were offered and will be offered on the altar in the temple. And it's known the point made by the Zohar. The Zohar says, the fact that it says Roshei Loshon Rabim, the fact that it says new moons, like heads, heads of months, and heads is in the plural. And then it says, how many heads does the moon have? Says like the head of the month, the head of, and the month means the moon. So the Zohar says, how many heads does the month have, does the moon have? And from that comes out the whole idea of Rosh Chodesh, of the new moon, the head of the month. Because this verse, and the heads of your months, is actually talking about every new moon, because all the new months of the year, all the new moons, come from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, from the new moon of Nisan, about which it says, this month should be for you the head of months, and it's the first for you of the months of the year. Now, this is a text which is in the book of Exodus, in Parshat Bo, just before the actual Exodus, shortly before. God says to Moses, this should be for you the head of the months, and it's really the first mitzvah in the Torah. It's the mitzvah about sanctifying the new moon and having a system of months. And the sages add that Moses saw what the moon looked like. God was showing him, as it were, was showing him the new moon. And when you see the new moon looking like this, you should sanctify the new moon. And in the time of the temple, there was, and even after, there was a ceremony where there was in the Beit Din, where when they were satisfied, witnesses had seen the moon, then they would take a glass of wine and say the blessing on the wine, and then they would recite a text expressing the fact that today is Rosh Chodesh, today is the new moon, and that is the original way of celebrating and expressing the new moon, rather than the way we have it now, which is in a printed diary, which has been calculated many centuries ago, and we're still running on that calculation. Now, so the basic thing is here that the new moon of Nisan is the basis of the spirituality of every new moon. And from that comes a special quality of all the new moons of every month, that they are such a way that they are drawn from the new moon of Nisan, which is fixed as the head of the month, the head of the months of the year. Right, okay, section two. Bet. What this means is, as it says in the Midrash on the verse, this month should be for you the first of the month. And it quotes a very interesting statement about the divine choice of ultimately of the Jewish people, but that also relates to choosing the world. And so it says that when Mishabacha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bo'olamo, when God chose his world, that's very intriguing, this idea of God choosing the world, right? God created the world. I mean, God created the whole universe with unknown, untold numbers of galaxies and stars and planets with the stars. And we are here in this particular planet of our particular star, which we call the sun. But God is choosing our world. Now, my wife and I spent Pesach in Toronto, and there I was reading the writings and the collections of a very interesting figure who lives there, Arne Gottfried, Dr. Arne Gottfried, who writes a lot and has written and taught a lot about science and Judaism. And the thing is that in quantum mechanics, there's this idea that consciousness is a crucial aspect of what they call collapsing the wave motion. And whose consciousness? Ultimately, it's God's consciousness. So you have these sort of myriad stars and possible planets and all kinds of different things there in space. And God chooses his world. This is the world. I mean, it makes very good sense in the light of these quantum mechanics ideas that God chooses the world, that this world here, down here, planet Earth, is going to be where the whole spiritual interaction is going to take place. So there might be millions of other planets and stars and suns and galaxies, but here is where it's actually going to happen. And he chose this world, And when he chose his world, Tavabo Roshe Chadashim, Chadashim B'Shanim. He fixed in the world new moons, right? The whole idea of a new moon, because we have the moon, a moon circling our Earth. Of course, there are other planets which have two moons circling them or more moons, but we have just one. And so there's the idea of the new moon when there's a particular conjunction that the moon is hidden and then it's revealed again. And from that also comes the idea of years. The fact that there's a certain number of the planet in relation to the sun has a cycle, and in terms of that cycle, that's a year. And when God chose Jacob and his children, that's the Jewish people to be, he also fixed a new moon of redemption. So God is choosing his world. He's choosing the idea of new moons. He's choosing Jacob and his son, and our ancestor Jacob and his sons, who are the ancestors of the Jewish people. And in that, he fixed the Rosh Chodesh, the new moon of redemption. That new moon of redemption was the new moon of Nisan a month ago, just under a month ago, and that led to the festival of Pesach. V'hainu, this means there's also, even before Jacob came on the scene, there were new moons which God had fixed when he chose his world, because he's chosen his world, and he's chosen the idea of the new moon in the world. And that is also, in a way, of Bechira, divine choice. This divine choice is a fascinating aspect of this discourse, that there's a divine choice taking place, which makes certain aspects of, you could say, the infinite variety of the universe, certain aspects become singular. And there's our world and the Jewish people ultimately. So nonetheless, before Jacob, the fact that God chose the world and chose the idea of new moons, that didn't relate, that wasn't on the level of the grandeur of what was achieved when he chose Jacob and his children. And then, when he's chosen Jacob and his children, then he's chosen a people, what is going to become a people, with a mysterious history of exile and redemption. That's, as it were, that's our hallmark. That's we begin as an exiled people. Fascinating. We begin as a people in exile in Egypt, and that's where we became a people, and then we're redeemed. And that month of redemption is a crucial aspect in our very the very essence of our being as the Jewish people. Now, continues in the discourse. One second. It continues in the discourse to explain the idea of the new moon of redemption, which was achieved when God chose Jacob and his sons. And that new moon of redemption is when the Jewish people went free from Egypt. And not only that, in the future, they will also go free from their later exile, which we're in at the moment. Now, what's the connection between the later redemption and the earlier redemption from Egypt? There's a verse. Ki meid seitcha me'eretz Mitzrayim, like the days of your going out of the land of Egypt, arenu nifla'ot, I will show you wonders when you go out of your final exile, when Mashiach comes. So that means that choosing Jacob and his children achieved shenigalu Yisrael, that the Jewish people, Israel, were redeemed from Egypt, beginning with the miracles and the wonders that were there on the first day of Pesach, right? The death of the Egyptian firstborn and the fact that the Jewish people were not harmed, the Jewish firstborn were not harmed. Even the sages tell us, even if there was a Jewish firstborn in the house of an Egyptian, not having blood on the doorposts of his door and lintel. But he's in the house. He's friendly with an Egyptian. They've gone there together to play cards or something like that. And so there they are together. The Egyptian firstborn would die, and the Jewish firstborn would not die. So that is part of the miracles, as it were, the wonders of the first day, the first night of Pesach. And that began the days of your going out of Egypt. Now it's interesting, the days of going out of Egypt. There are a number of times when the Torah or the prophets speak of days of going out of Egypt, because going out of Egypt then was one day, but there are future Egypts, as it were, future periods of exile from which we have to break out. And so it's, and sometimes it might be a personal exile in which the individual is trapped in himself or herself, and we have to break out of that. And that's also a personal going out of Egypt. And that is when the King of Kings of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He, was revealed to them in His glory and His essence, and redeemed them, right? These are very powerful words. Nigla alei melech malchim, the King of Kings of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be, was revealed in His essence and redeemed them. The point that the discourse is trying to achieve, or one point that I think it is part of what the discourse wants to achieve, is that we should be conscious of this intense spiritual power of the revelation of the King of Kings of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He, in His glory and essence, and how that is fueling us and redeeming us every day of the year. That's the discourse in one line. And so, as a continuation and conclusion of the going out of Egypt, there's the splitting of the sea. Now we come to the splitting of the sea, which was on the seventh day of Pesach. Right? So the seventh day of Passover, of Pesach, the festival we just had, that represents the splitting of the sea. We read in the Torah about the splitting of the sea. The general custom is everyone stands up. We read the Song of the Sea, which Moses sang with the Jewish people. And then we come to the real goal of the going out of Egypt and the splitting of the sea, that all of this was in order to go to a beautiful land, the country, Eretz Tova Urechava, a good and broad land, our beautiful land of Israel. And through this, so that's the redemption, going out of Egypt, splitting the sea, and then getting the Torah at Mount Sinai, he's going to mention in a minute, and then coming to the land of Israel. And through this was achieved also that in the month of Nisan that we're still in the future, we will, hopefully this right now, the present, we will be redeemed, as the Torah says, which we just read, it's from the book of Micha, the prophet Micha. Like the days of your going out of Egypt, I will show you wonders. And as I mentioned, the Rebbe saying, or was mentioned, in several discourses before this, that this is not only an imaginary thing that I will show, it's not just a comparison, that I will show you wonders in the with the coming of Mashiach, which will be in a way similar to the days of going out of Egypt, but it's also cause and effect. That the fact of us going out of Egypt is the cause which leads to the effect of the going free in the future redemption, the redemption of the future, which hopefully now is that future. And so, similarly, with all the other aspects of the going out of Egypt, such as the splitting of the sea. So, the splitting of the sea, now there's a verse which he quotes over here, Hafach Yam LeYabasha. God changed the sea to dry land. That's in the past. Bana yavru berega, but in the and they crossed the river by foot. Sham nismachabo, and there we will rejoice in him. Now, so what we've got here is two stages of history. There's in the past, the Hafach Yam Liyabasha, the transforming of the sea to dry land. That's what happened with the splitting of the sea in the time of going out of Egypt. But that is the cause for the supernatural event that's going to be in the future when there's a river. The prophets describe a river that we cross. And that we cross it on foot. This is actually a verse in Psalms. So there's a river that we will cross, and then we will rejoice. Now that is talking about a mystical event, a miraculous event in the time of Mashiach. And it's known the explanation about the different ways in which it puts it, that one is in the past, one is in the future, because one is talking about what happened going out of Egypt. And the other part of the verse is talking about what will happen in the time of Mashiach. And in fact, in the Song of the Sea as well, when Moses and the Jewish people and Miriam also took part in the Song of the Sea with her, the women, and they sang a special song together with timbrels, with different musical instruments. So that in that song, we also have a line which is in the future. Al yavo amcha Hashem. Till your people, O God, pass by, till your people which you possessed. And so, even though they said this after going through the Red Sea, nonetheless, they say they will cross. They will cross in the future. And it explains in another discourse that this is something to do with the future, the messianic future, when there will be a recognition of the power, the input of the splitting of the sea in the going out of Egypt onto what is happening in the future with the coming of Mashiach and the various images about splitting a river. For example, here we have another verse, the Hinif Yado Alana, that there will his hand will be waved over the river and dry up the river and will go over the river. And then it comes to the idea of Sham Nitzmecha Bo, there we will rejoice in God. All this, so we're looking, over a span of thousands of years. All this is included in the Rosh Chodesh of Geula, the Rosh Chodesh of redemption, which was fixed, as the Midrash told us, when God chose Jacob and his children, chose Jacob to be. And his children to be the family of the Jewish people, and with that, with the Jewish people, goes together the month of redemption and the new month, the new moon of redemption, which flows through the entirety of history. Right, now let me stop sharing if I can find the cursor. Sorry. Right. Okay, so let's just see if there is some kind of comment by anyone on this. I'm sorry, Rabbi Lou is not with us. He is busy in America. Okay, so any comments or questions by anyone?
Dr. Löwenthal, I wondered why the whole thing started with Jacob and his sons or children. I'm not sure I got that connection.
That's a very good point. You see, there's a kind of an interplay between God and the Jewish people. Now, why should there be an interplay between God and the Jewish people? Because we have the upper reaches of the divine, as it were, the male dimension of the divine. And then we have the female dimension of the divine. Now, the female dimension of the divine, in the terms of the 10 Sfirot, is described as the Sfira Malchut, the divine attribute kingship. But there's a way of understanding what this divine attribute is that it is the sun, the sum, sorry, S-U-M, the sum of the souls of the Jewish people are actually the feminine dimension of the divine. And so the unity between the divine and Malchut, kingship, is really a unity between God and the Jewish people. And it's that mystical concept which is at the heart of creation. Because creation only took place in order to establish a dwelling for the divine in the lower world, and this interaction, as it were, between God and the Jewish people. Now, we might say that around the Jewish people are all the other nations of the world, and the Jewish people have a shlichut, have a responsibility towards the other nations of the world to communicate to them the seven Noahide laws, and that there should be a world of peace and of goodness. And in that world of peace and goodness should be the special priesthood, as it were, of the Jewish people. That's exactly what God said to Moses just before the giving of the Torah, that you should tell them that Atem ki yuli, you will be for me a nation of priests and a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And so there is needed that dimension together with God. You've got God and this holy nation, and around that blossoms everything else. Does that make more sense?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other points from anyone else? Now, someone's put something in the chat. Let's see if I can read it. And the chat says, for some reason, I logged in twice. Okay, so someone had some problem. It's Shira. Well, I hope that worked, Shira. Okay, thank you. Right, so any other points? Hi, Gloria, it's nice seeing you. So do you have
Hi,
any?
Tali.
Hi.
Hi, Tali. I'm interested in the concept that you're raising about crossing of the Red Sea, and this kind of comes up as an image or a metaphor later on, also when you're referring to the Messianic age about crossing a river. And it seems to me, is this perhaps more important than the actual arrival? I'm just wondering. I'm
That's
trying to
very
link the
beautiful.
two.
That's a very beautiful concept. Now, I'm not sure how to what extent we'll actually get this. It's quite a long discourse, and we might not manage to cover every aspect. But let me explain now that the sea and the splitting of the sea has a very important mystical role in general, and as explained in this discourse. And that mystical role is as follows. I'm just trying to remove something which is somehow some little right, okay. So there's the idea of the hidden realms. Let's just think in mystical terms. There's the idea of the hidden realms and the idea of the revealed realm. One way this is described is like the yud and the hey of the divine name, the first part of the divine name, the higher part. And then there's the revealed realm, which is the lower letters of the divine name. Now, that's not how the discourse here describes it, but that's just an easy way, perhaps, of thinking about it. So you have this mysterious hidden realm and the revealed realm. The mysterious hidden realm is represented by the sea and this or the river and the water. And by the fact of dividing the water and seeing the dry land is like the revelation of what is hidden on a down-to-earth way. So rather that a person has to sort of leave the ordinary practical world and enter into some kind of mystical state. Yes, we could imagine that as a possible route. And that's how the person gets involved with this sort of deeply spiritual realm. But no, the sea is split, or the river is split. And because of that, the revelation of what this mystery is, it's revealed, and it's revealed here in this world. So walking across the sea as if it were dry land, walking across the river as if it were dry land, are expressions of the hidden being revealed. And that took place in the process from leaving Egypt towards and the route to the giving of the Torah, because the giving of the Torah is another example of the same thing. The hiddenness of the upper realms in which the Torah is concealed became split, so to speak, open, so that we were able to hear the divine words, I am the Lord your God, and all the other teachings of the Ten Commandments, which was an absolutely amazing revelation from above. And that is also all the way through history to leading to the time of Mashiach, when the river will split, when at that point that spiritual dimension will again be revealed. Does that help you?
Thank you. Thank you very much. It does.
Thank you. Okay. Right. Okay. Let's go back to the discourse. Yes, thank you. Yeah, I'm going to skip this next paragraph, and we come to this paragraph here. So this is paragraph four, Dalet. But we still have to understand the greatness of the going out of Egypt. And what is so special about it, that it's on the basis of the going out of Egypt that we see the wonders in the future. So, and that in order to have those wonders in the future, we need the beginning. And the beginning was the going out of Egypt. And similarly, as we have the idea with the river, that in order to have the idea of going across the river by foot, meaning the river's dried up, there is the need to have the splitting, the changing of the sea to dry land thousands of years earlier. Now, wouldn't you say that in the future there'll be the idea of remembering that we went out of Egypt, but surely that will be a secondary thing. The main thing then will be the redemption by Mashiach, and the redemption in the world as it'll be then. So why do we have to have this idea of going out of Egypt in such an emphatic way, that that is really the source of showing us the wonders of the future? Now, we also have to understand the difference between the going out of Egypt and the splitting of the Red Sea. What's the reason why there's such an emphasis on the going out of Egypt? As, for example, regarding the giving of the Torah. So when God was speaking to Moses at the burning bush, he said to him, when you take this people, they're talking about God. The Moses should be given the task to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. And God says to him, when you take the people out of Egypt, you'll serve me on this mountain, on this mountain. Now, that mountain where the burning bush was is actually Mount Sinai. So it's at that spot that they're going to come to for the giving of the Torah. So, and another link. So there's a very beautiful expression here. When we got the Torah, we had the true freedom from the slavery of Egypt and the slavery of every kind of kingdom that might try to enslave us, whoever it is, whether it was Nazis or Stalin or whatever terrible thing there has been in the past, that all of it, we are free from that. We are free from that, as it says in Pirkei Avot, in Ethics of the Fathers, Charut al haluchot. It mentions that the divine words were engraved on the tablets of stone of the Ten Commandments, and the sages there say, don't read it the word charut, but the word chirut. Don't read it engraved, but freedom. There's freedom on the stones. The words of the Ten Commandments engraved on the stone of the Ten Commandments, those words are actually freedom, and that gives us freedom. And as it said at the beginning of the Ten Commandments, I am the Lord your God who's brought you out of the land of Egypt. So there's a sense in which at that moment that God is giving us the Torah is the most powerful going out of Egypt and the most powerful freedom that the person could achieve with the help of God, being given by God, this bond with God that we were able to achieve through the fact of going out of Egypt, and that was expressed in the giving of the Torah. Now, section 5, hey. So, explaining this, what's so significant about the going out of Egypt and how it affects also the splitting of the sea and the giving of the Torah? The reason why the idea, now you see, there's an interesting thing that the splitting of the Red Sea in the Talmud is called a difficult thing for God. It's kosher kriyat Yam Suf. It's as difficult as the splitting of the Red Sea. Now, how can you say that splitting the sea is difficult for God? Surely everything is easy for God, right? There are whole, like, somewhat fruitless philosophical discussions. You know, can God make a square triangle? Or, you know, is there something so heavy? Can God make something so heavy that he can't lift it up? You know, in a sense, they're like language games rather than real investigation. But what we can try to understand is what does it mean? What do the sages mean when they say it's difficult to split the sea for God? That for God, in some way, it's difficult to split the sea. And what the discourse explains, first of all, it goes back to what I tried to summarize earlier about the idea of the spiritual realm and the revealed realm. And the fact that God created these realms as separate, that there's a spiritual realm which is separate from the physical revealed realm. And then even when you talk about the sea and the dry land, God created the world in such a way that there are areas where there's sea, and they are sort of delineated by the sand around the sea, right? The beach going all the way around the sea. And then we have the dry land. And these are meaningful divisions. They are spiritually meaningful divisions. And nonetheless, they're divisions which God has created, and in that sense, they're spiritually meaningful. But God breaks down those divisions and splits the sea. Now, that is, so that is an important step. It's not a simple thing. It's a step where God is, in a sense, going against his own definition of the way the world should be. The world, he creates the world in such a way that there's a spiritual realm which is separate to a visible realm, a material realm. He creates it in such a way that there are seas and there's dry land. And then the fact that these borders can be crossed, can be deconstructed, can be opened. That's a fascinating concept. And so it's in that sense that splitting the sea is something which is, so to speak, difficult. So to speak, difficult. And in fact, when the sea was split, the Midrash tells us that every gathering of water throughout the world was split. That if someone had an ornamental pool in their garden in China, I'm not sure if they go in for ornamental pools. Maybe they do. The Japanese certainly do. All right, so there was an ornamental pool in Japan. assuming they had the same aesthetic 3,500 years ago. And then the sea split for the Jewish people fleeing from Egypt. The water in the ornamental pool also split. And it was a remarkable thing that all over the world, every body of water split. And it's sort of reflecting what is happening really on a mystical dimension far higher up. And there is this transformation, this splitting taking place, and the revealing of the dry land, so to speak, within the waters, the hiding waters of the sea or the river, or the spiritual realm. And that can all be, and so that is a kind of a unity which is described in two different ways. That the revealed can either ascend and become part of the spiritual realm, and that's the way the revealed dimension expresses spirituality, or it can be the other way around, and the spiritual dimension goes down into the material dimension and is revealed there. So it's, and whichever way it is a unity of different factors which are normally kept separate. One is normally the sea or the hidden realm, and the other is normally the dry land and the revealed realm. But here they are being unified together. Now, it explains in various places that in order for there, including the Chumash, beginning of the Torah itself, that in order for there to be the splitting of the sea, there had to be the strong east wind. Now, the Rebbe explains that this word east, the east doesn't mean east. The word kadim, which is the word that can be taken as east, also means original and beyond and a kind of an exalted spiritual level. In other words, in order to have the splitting of the sea, there had to be a revelation of a very exalted spiritual level altogether. And not only that, there had to be Moses lifting his staff. And that lifting of Moses' staff is also a kind of a cosmic act. And it's through these cosmic acts that there comes about the ultimate splitting of the sea and the which leads later on to the splitting of the river in the time of Mashiach and the tremendous sense of revelation of the divine, which is there and in the past as well. Now, great as the splitting of the sea is, that whole idea began with the time when you had the beginning of the actual going out of Egypt. And then there was the very exalted revelation mentioned before that the King of Kings of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He in His glory and His essence, was revealed and He redeemed them. Now, it explains in a book of Hasidic teaching, which began in 1912, that when it talks about, so these two terms, bechodo uve'atzmo, the glory of God and the essence of God. When it speaks about the glory of God, it's talking about the attribute kingship of Ein Sof. Now, imagine that. We're going back, higher and higher and higher. And we're coming before the Tzimtzum, before the concealment which led to the revelation of the universe. And we're going before that. And we're going to a point where there is kingship of Ein Sof, Malchut of Ein Sof, the kingship of the infinite. And then we're going even further back to Tiferet, the third sphera of Ein Sof. And so there we have, so Malchut can be called the feminine, before the Tzimtzum, and then there's the masculine before the Tzimtzum, and then what we're talking about is the way in which these two come together, that powerful cosmic union of the, so to speak, Tiferet, the male dimension of the infinite before the Tzimtzum, together with the, so to speak, female dimension, kingship, which is female. And that union together, that is the cosmic thing which brought about the going out of Egypt and the splitting of the sea and the giving of the Torah, and it'll be the key to the revelation of Mashiach the revelation achieved by Mashiach. So this is all an incredible conjunction which leads to an incredible illumination, and so much so that we say that Shebechol HaLeilot HaChol HaShana, that in the Manishtana we say all night of the year, we don't dip even once. Whereas this night of the going out of Egypt, we dip twice, right? That's in the Manishtana. And it explains this in the Siddur, the prayer book of the Arizal of Rabbi Isaac Luria. And the thing is that these are special spiritual events, and the idea of dipping is described in terms of a special spiritual event, but in fact we don't do it most of the year. It's only on the festival of Pesach that we have this ritual dipping, and that ritual dipping is an expression of the, it doesn't actually pad it out here, doesn't clarify here, but that dipping is an expression of the intense spirituality of that moment. And so there you have the dipping which took place at the light of the Seder, and the whole idea of this revelation from this high, exaltedly high aspect of the divine before the Tzimtzum, where the male and female, so to speak, interact with a cosmic effect. Now, then it speaks a bit more about this revelation that was there at the giving, at the splitting of the sea, where it speaks in the Talmud, and it's explained elsewhere as well, that the babies that were in their mother's wombs were able to see, as it were, the divine revelation that took place at the splitting of the sea. It was something incredible, and a child could appreciate that. I saw revelation of a bit of this spiritual dimension while I was there in Egypt doing something about that, but that is really the reality that is being revealed and what the discourse wants, that we should be able to see and express that reality throughout our lives, encountering the world in our daily life and being able to see this intense spirituality in the world. So I'm just stopping here. So at this moment we're talking about this intense experience of the going out of Egypt and how it affects the next things that are happening, the splitting of the sea, and it's going to talk about the giving of the Torah. It's all going to be positively affected by the splitting of the sea. And that will lead to the future redemption as well. So I think unless someone has a question that they very much want to ask, and anyone have that, we can go back to looking at the text and seeing how far we can go understanding this. Right. Now, this is why the splitting of the sea was also the preparation for the giving of the Torah. Now, let's just try to understand. In order to understand the significance of that, we have to try and understand what the Torah is. The inyan of Torah, the concept of Torah, is that Torah and God are really one. And in such a way, and in such a way that it has to be drawn down below, the Torah has to be given in the world to human beings. But it's this point of union between God and the Torah. It's a very intense union there. But nonetheless, this has to be brought down into the world. And as it says about the Torah, God says, "Aren't my words like fire?" And so therefore, first there has to be the splitting of the sea, the changing of the sea to dry land, there that the barriers, which are a barrier not only for sea and dry land, they're a barrier of the depths of Torah as well. And those barriers had to be broken through. So because the barriers of sea and dry land were broken through, the barriers which keep the Torah separate from existence were also broken through, so that we were able to see the special spiritual continuum of the deepest levels of the esoteric dimension that's which is then revealed in the simplest aspects of daily life. Now, all that, the splitting of the sea and the way the splitting of the sea has to do with other aspects and the significance of it, all that comes about because there had been the revelation of the divine which lifted us out of the exile of Egypt. And so therefore it's because of that intensity of the of the divine union before we went out of Egypt. So that then carries through and brings us out of Egypt and also has all kinds of other positive effects as well. And this is particularly significant because in Egypt we were sunk in 49 attributes of impurity, and God took us out of that, brought us to serve him on that mountain, Mount Sinai. And that's where we were able to serve God. And through that, we were given the secrets and secrets of secrets of the divine. You see that in Hebrew, razin, derazin. That's those secrets of Torah were being revealed, and we went free, and we went free in such a way that we're able to include those dimensions of secrecy, of hiddenness, that's as a soul in a body. It's the soul in the body together that get those profound teachings from God. Now, so there we get the idea from the idea that there is a redemptive aspect to the new moon of Nisan, which brings about the redemption from Egypt. There's a parallel and similar concept in relation to all the months of the year, and particularly the month when we will go free from this present exile and be able to recognize the divine face to face. And that will be through the way in which we are able to bring about this revelation of the divine presence and its redemptive force, and we're able to marshal, to harness that, and to express it every day of the year. So I hope that's clear. And then he explains here how the month of Nisan, the conclusion of the month of Nisan, flows into the beginning of the month of year, the next month. And so therefore, really every single month and every single new moon has got this spiritual dimension, and the new moon filters into every single day of the month. So therefore, all the days of the month, all the days of one's life, are days which have got this intense spirituality within them. Now, section 9, what does this mean in the soul of the person and the life of the person? To understand this in terms of the service of the Jew, because in addition to the idea that we're talking about something very exalted, which comes out in this real world, in fact, it was the thought of the Jewish people, which was something which, in a way, came before the world. That even before the world was created, there's this concept of the Torah and of the and of the Jewish people that are going to be created and going to be formed, as the Torah describes. Sometimes it's a touch and go whether we're going to survive and how it's going to work, but it does work, and that's the power of the Torah together with us together. And this is, as the Baal Shem Tov says, that reported by the previous Rebbe, That's 1 second. That the Jewish people asked God to remember the quality of Ma. Now, Ma is that idea, that aspect of an exalted level of godliness, and that we remember, and we're asking God to remember that. In other words, for God to, so to speak, think back to the very essence of his connecting with us and going down through the millennia, really. And this is expressed through the tremendous love of one's fellow that a Jew might have. And he uses phrases here which express the Jew weeping and very concerned. And he's weeping because he's concerned for the other person. And his love, his sense of love for that other person, makes him feel the tremendous pain that that person is in. Now, all that is something which unites us to God in a very intimate way, because there's a question of whether or not the individual is able to really bond with another individual, but or can we bond with God, also a question. But the point is that we are able to a certain extent to bond with another Jew or every Jew, knowing that this is what God wants us to do, so that are aspects which are hidden, but in that hiddenness is revealed the oneness which is us and which is able to be there together. And that's why, okay, so this is on page 19. And that is why the real purpose of God in creating the world is that he should have a dwelling in the lower world. And in order to get that, he has to have a people that he gives commands to that people, and they transfer the commands to someone else. And so, therefore, there's able to be this sense of unity coming through in this incredible way. And he emphasizes here the idea that the Jewish people risk their lives for each other, this sense of goodness and purity in the Jewish people, that we risk our lives for each other because of Atzmut, because of the essence. And this is a very powerful thing in terms of the Jewish people ourselves, but it then leads to the land of Israel. And that's why Hinei b'Shvil Zeh, line 18 here on this page, which is page 19. So in order for us to have this special quality, we also need the land of Israel, because the land of Israel is also part of this whole chosen package, right? God chooses the Jewish people and he chooses the land of Israel. And the discourse speaks about the way in which the nations of the world might challenge our connection with the land of Israel, and say to us that we are thieves, we won it from the other people who had it first, and then we came along, and what we have in the land of Israel, we redeemed that, so to speak, from the other nations who had it first. Like the depiction in the Torah is that there were the Canaanites, the ancient Canaanites, divided in several different tribes, and we, the Jewish people, came along and took the land from them. And so that is because at the very beginning, the land was given by God to this to the Canaanites, to the ancient Canaanites, and then we have to come along and take it from them. And that's what has happened in the Torah, and that's in a way what is mirrored in the last century, that we do have the land of Israel. We should have been there looking after certain aspects of it all the time, but then we are there again, and we do capture aspects of it, and those aspects are something very significant. And so this is The Rebbe ends with the blessing that we should be able to achieve that in our own lives, revealing the goodness and the greatness which is there from the divine before the unity of before the coming of Mashiach, which reveals us, I'm just trying to stop sharing, which reveals us and our ability to connect with God through the Torah, through our love of one's fellow, through the mitzvot, and through prayer, and through Torah teachings, which have a tremendous power to join us together with the infinite. Okay, thank you. Right. Okay. Are there any comments? Any questions? Comments? Did that make sense, Gloria?
Yes, perfect sense. Thank you.
It's
Very stimulating.
very beautiful teaching. Very,
Yes,
very
yes.
clear teaching.
Thank you, Tali. Yes.
Matichel, what do you think?
It struck me that the whole thing ended with "Ahavta l'recha kamocha,"
Yes.
and as we speak, my youngest son is trying to draft for what is equivalent to the British SAS elite soldiers in Israel, basically in order to defend other Jews. I think I don't necessarily consider him especially religious, but I think that's incredible, Messias Nefesh, when I think about it, and I
A
somehow it
hundred
makes perfect
percent.
sense right now with what you're saying.
100%, Matityahu. But the Rebbe spoke about the soldiers, the Israeli IDF, as being tzaddikim gemurim, complete, righteous, and their very presence, the fact that there is a unit, and it might be on the border, it might be somewhere, is just by their presence, they're saving lives. And certainly they're risking their lives, and that's very, very much affirmed by the Rebbe as being a very spiritual and wonderful thing that they do. He should be well, he should be safe in every way, and all
Amen. Amen.
colleagues in every way.
Amen to that. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, so thank you very much for joining, and I hope we can meet next week as well.
Thank you,
Yes. Thank
Tali.
you very much, Dr.
Thank you. Thank
All the
you.
best.
Thank you.
All the
Thank
best.
you very much, Rabbi Tully.
Lovely seeing you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Naftali.
Thank
Uh,
you,
do
Tully.
we do we have a lesson this Sunday, or is it going to be next Sunday?
Though this Sunday is the Talmud talk with our group.
Bezat Hashem.
Yeah, I haven't sent out the reminder yet. But
Okay.
yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tully.
Have a good evening.
Well,
Thank you.
all the
thank
best.
you.
Right.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.